This is the Black Chisel Podcast. Real people, real experiences, real resilience.
Tim Grant, who is he? Played first grade rugby league in the NRL in the national competition with the Penrith Panthers, the mighty Penrith Panthers, which is an incredible performance outfit, and that's all jokes aside. He also played with South Sydney and finished his career up with the West Tigers. Now, Tim's got some experience like our good selves. He post-retirement, took himself away and started doing a bit of underground work in mining around the Wollongong region of New South Wales, and did that for a period of time while he also continued to support the NRL and the West Tigers through a player development type role. But leading into 2024, there's a lot going on at the West Tigers and they're rebuilding for a future. And Tim's now the full-time player development officer at the West Tigers. And you know, we say player development officer, but what does that mean? He'll probably be able to share some of that with, but it's a jack of all trades, but it sits in the playground as well of the mental skills coach and performance and mentoring and coaching and resilience and all those things we talk about. So on that note, Tim, good morning, mate.
Hey, Clay, how you going, mate?
Mate, very good. Bit of a good morning to you, mate. And how's Sydney weather this morning?
Not too bad, mate. We're 3 hours ahead, so got a bit of a training session this morning, enjoying a bit of sun.
So. Mate, so listen, what we do here, Tim, we talk resilience, right? Because for me, I'm pretty much a believer that resilience is that foundational piece that we all need in a modern world. To take us forward, to develop and to perform and to do the things that we want to do. But I think it's a neglected skill in the modern day because I think a lot of people just accustom it to, I'm resilient or I'm not resilient, I'm tough or I'm not tough or whatever it may be. Whereas I know it to be something completely different. You know, it's a suite of skill and mental flexibility and everything else that goes with. So in your own words, Tim, I mean, if I said you, Tim Grant, with all your playing experience and being around, you know, high-performance sport and everything else, what does resilience actually mean to you? How would you, in your own words, define it or describe it or put it into some sort of context?
Yeah, it's a funny one, resilience, because it's one of them ones that it can be defined in so many different ways or terms or words or actions. I think with the new generations, Gen Z, so to speak, I think there's a bit of a lack of, you know, we dive so far into mental health and what young people get exposed to these days with social media and that sort of stuff, and we've sort of gone away from old school. You know, when we're growing up, your mum or your dad just give you a pat on the back, you'll be right free back on the bike. Now we sort of overanalyze it. What were you thinking when you fell off the bike? Well, you know, let's put a safety guard on the bike and all this stuff. So I think resilience gets glossed over these days, but it's shown in different ways as well. I'm not saying that Gen Z is not resilient at all. They just show it in different ways. And to me, I like to simplify a lot of things. I've gone pretty hard into the mental game, not just in mental health and, you know, depression and mental health continuums and that sort of stuff. But how can we become better people and better performers through the mental health side of things? And I don't see mental health as a negative. Everyone's got health. Some people have good health, some people have bad health. It's just a word. But to me, resilience, if I can simplify it, is some are broomsticks and some people are bamboos. So, you know, the main goal is try and convert, in our space, convert the players into bamboo, because the only way to get the best out of people is to flex them. You don't know your limits until you push it. And if you're not resilient, you're a broomstick, it snaps. So
yeah.
Just to simplify it, let's have bamboo and we can flex it and see how far we can actually go.
I like that, Tim. You know, last week we had a good friend of mine, Bob Hunter, who's a Special Forces legend. I think I've mentioned him to you in the past when we've had conversations. And it's interesting you said about our childhood, because he pretty much shared with the group that, you know, one of the first things he learned was his mum saying, just get on with it, right? And it's sort of funny. But I like that piece, because I often say to people about resilience, and I say, look, resilience is not about toughness. You know, it might be a minor ingredient within, or it might be a factor within, but it's about mental flexibility. So I've never heard that before. I like that bamboo analogy, because it is. It's about mental and, for that matter, emotional flexibility. And I like what you just said there. You push people to a point and see how far we can flex and see if we can sort of snap back into shape at the result of that. So I love that piece. So how do you guys work on that, Tim? Let's get straight to the point. You're at the West Tigers this year. It's 2024, well publicised, new coach in Benji Marshall. With all sincerity and understanding and appreciation, you know, last year was a terrible year for the Tigers, a lot of pressure on them now. How do you start a season and factor in that bamboo piece? How do you factor in your resilience work?
Yeah, I think it's very personalised and it's an individual trait to have. But as a group, it's one thing that we need to learn, and we need to learn quick, is to become resilient. If you look at data, you know, we've got people here, sports scientists, analytics, like everything that the boys do from the moment they get in the doors here is monitored right down to the point where they're away from here, what they eat, how they sleep, all that sort of stuff. Mm. You know, I was fortunate enough to spend some time at the Panthers and also Souths off the back of a premiership. And if anything, you look at the data, it's just as good here or even better. So where are we going wrong? And for me, and one thing we've identified as well, is it's that resilience piece. I think when times get tough, you revert back to behaviours and also just what you know. So if we're starting to get beat or something happens in a game, we lose our key players or something like that, what's our mindset at? So one thing we've actually we've really invested in this year is, one, getting to know each other, getting to know each other's background, but also understanding yourself and what goes through your head. Like you might sit down with a sports psych or whatever they want to name it, mental performance coach or something like that. It'll say, if you drop the ball, just think of what's next in that. But as humans, we don't do that. We think of why we drop the ball. Am I scared? Next one's coming. A player doesn't learn how to catch or drop a ball overnight. Like these guys are elite athletes. The difference between the team that comes first and the team that comes last, there isn't a huge difference. These guys know how to tackle that, how to catch a ball. He doesn't forget how to catch a ball as it's coming to him. So be able to have the skill set to be identify the trait in, was I in the right position to catch the ball? Did I call for the ball? Did I know the play? All that sort of stuff. You've got to think of that real quick, but the next one is, all right, where am I? Who am I? What's my next job? Real quick. You've got to identify what your thoughts are, because they're there for a reason, but also how long you're in that quick mindset of, you know what, I didn't do my job there. All right, okay, what's next? And I think a reaction as people that are high performers, we all automatically go, all right, how can I make up for it? And that's super positive, but how can I make up for it within our framework and what we do? So instead of going, how can I make up for a fly on the line to put a shot on, because the crowd will get pumped up and the boys will get pumped up. But while you're doing that, that's outside of the process, and the other 12 guys in the field don't know what you're doing, so you miss another tackle and that compounds that. It's, all right, what can I do right now that's going to add to where I need to be next and what the team needs, you know? And sometimes that's just...
Wow, that's a perspective I never really considered. I was thinking very much, yeah, Tim, you've dropped the ball and then you want to be that player that puts the big shot on straight afterwards to sort of repay, I guess, the mistake that you've made. But I also know from playing the game myself that, yeah, darting out of the line, you created pressure on the people outside you or created a hole or whatever it may well be. So you can actually compound the problem that you've initially created.
And then you start putting pressure on the people around you. You know,
yeah.
Plays heads off, what's going on? And then I'm thinking about your performance. I'm not thinking about where I am. And it's just a pebble in the pond, you know. You drop the pebble and it flows through the whole game, the whole team. So it's the matter of, you know what, we're not going to judge you on dropping a ball, and we're not going to judge you on flying out the line and put the shot on. We're going to judge you on what's next. What does the team need? Where are we? And just getting back to centre. You can't live in the highs too long, because it's a false economy. You can't live in the lows too long either. So I'm not saying don't enjoy your moment, because that's very important. And you can't brush over your mistakes either, because that's so important as well. It's like, get back to centre, know your role, and get on with it, because you've got 80 minutes to do that. We'll worry about the technical side of it, why you dropped the ball, where you're in the wrong position. That's what the video sessions are for. That's not on the field. We'll go through reviews of matches and that for that reason. Don't do it while you're on the field.
Can I take advantage of something for a minute? Because it's got my attention. You know, with this organisation, one of our organisational values is we say we're agile, right? And agile means different things to different people. But really, when we say agile, it means we move really quick, we change direction really quick, and for that matter, we're reactive. But I've taken it upon myself to study agile a little bit more and appreciate that, yeah, there are factors of agile, but there's one key piece that's required with agile, and it's having a consistent backbone to go back to, right? To have a frame to go back to when it gets crazy. I heard you just say twice, and it's got my attention. I'm really interested. You said twice, go back to centre. And I know you weren't talking about go back to the centres, but right, when you say go back to centre, is that like an anchor point? Is that a backbone? Can you explain that to me a little bit more?
Yeah, it's just something that personally I like to refer to. Get back to the middle. It's just what resonates with me. As when I was playing, I was a front rower. So if I needed to steer the team, if we were going a bit lopsided, because you know, there's so many variables in footy. You take the space and you take your opportunity, but you know, the framework's there to give you a guide. But all the good players play what's in front of them. So we might be on a game plan and you know, there's an opportunity on the left edge and we'll take that. Beautiful. But let's get back to the centre, because that's what everyone's trained to do, is say, for instance, we'll get to a point on the field. So it's just the terminology I like to use.
I like it.
Centre.
I've
done a bit of research in that, and throughout my travels and that, spoke to a lot of people, and I actually knew the guy that was head performance with the All Blacks and the Crusaders, and he said some of the guys there, without mentioning their names, you know, pretty influential guys, especially in this space as well, in the corporate wellbeing space and corporate speaking, and that stomp the ground, because you know, with the Kiwi heritage and that, they revert to the earth and
that sort of stuff. Is that Gilbert Anoka? Is that Gilbert Anoka, Tim, that you're referencing?
Jennings was his name,
Oh, really? Because I was privileged enough to meet and spend a bit of time during the COVID period with Gilbert Anoka, who was the mental skills coach of the All Blacks as well. And I see that now, and as did Jason O'Rourke, and I see now that he's joining Maguire at New South Wales. So sorry, mate. Sorry to drift away from that, but I was just curious whether you were referencing Gilbert Anoka there.
Yeah, mate. There's been so many people that worked in that space, but for this one player, he'd stomp the ground, and from everyone else looking, they'll be like, "What's going on? Like, is that him showing that he got the shits?" But for him, that was bringing him back to the centre, you know. And it's good to have something that's always going to be there, and don't have your centre as a variable, you know, like, there's been crazy psychs and that have come in, and they'd be like, when you go off centre, all you got to do is find something red to look at, and that'll bring you into the centre. It's like people get hypnotised to give up smoking and that, and they'll give you a little trigger.
Yeah.
It might be something red, you might feel like a cigarette, but if you take it personally to find what works for you, for him it was stomping the ground. For some guys, they're up to scared, so they'll like look at the left corner post, look at the right corner post, look at the crossbar, like the black dot on the post, like whatever it is, you know. But I really think it does bring you back to what's your job. Like it just narrows your focus. Doesn't matter what the crowd's doing, what the opposition's doing, and then as soon as you've got yourself, instead of going in your head and talking to yourself, because we get a lot of noise on a footy field. You go, I thought I was speaking. I thought I was doing what I had to do. But you speak within yourself, within your own head. So as soon as you're back to centre, speak to the people next to you, because that's the glue that holds everything together.
I love that, mate. We talk about the whole, you know, circle of control and circle of concern piece and everything else, because ultimately, you know, probably on any given day, a vast majority of people I speak to, myself included, on a regular basis, we drift out into that forest, that circle of concern where we can't see anything, right? and you spend your days trying to bring people back to centre, which I would call the circle of control, I guess. Let's go to State of Origin for a minute, because you played a couple of games there for New South Wales against those hideous people from Queensland. Tell me what that environment must be like, being on the field. Have you played in Queensland, or you played both games in New South Wales, or what's it like standing on the field?
Oh, mate, it was literally the highlight of my career. Being a staunch New South Welshman and coming through as a kid, I seen them win a lot. I think the tides had turned back then. We had the Joey Johnses and the Paul Harrigans and Steve Menzies, them sort of guys. So for me, it was bigger than Christmas. We'd gather around the TV, and that was the ultimate for me. State of Origin was just what I wanted to do as a kid. I did get the opportunity to put on the jersey, and for me, it wasn't that I was unsure about it, but I was pretty young at the time, and starting in the front row is probably, it can become intimidating, but I got a phone call from Gus Gould, and he just said, he goes, club footy, and that's one thing. He goes, but this game is made for you. And I think I didn't really understand what he was getting at. And then once I was immersed in camp and got the stories from the old guys about they put the whistle in their pocket and they let a bit go. I wasn't the most skillful player. I just loved to play the game tough and do the job, do the job at hand. My game was built off the back of physicality, and I guess the Origin Arena suited that. So, mate, it was everything that I thought it would be and more. And you know what? I think it's probably easier playing State of Origin than it is club footy, just because you've got the best around you. That's probably a reference that the guys in the SAS and military talk about. It's safer doing the high intense operations because you've got the best of the best around you. So all you've got to do is narrow focus, just do your job. Don't step outside your lane. And, mate, it's the best ever.
I could not imagine. I mean, the one thing I want to get to as well on that point was when you step up to that level. I remember, not to talk back in my day, but I remember when I stepped up from, say, reserve grade to first grade, it became a blur because the speed was just the difference, right? So, you'd run around reserve grade, you seemed to have vision, you seemed to have clarity. And then all of a sudden you'd step up into first grade and you couldn't see your hands in front of your face, so to speak, because it was just so fast, right? It's a little bit like business as well. We often have people that are in, leadership roles or talent roles and they're doing a good job, and all of a sudden we thrust them into a leadership role, and it's a little bit like they lose that vision as well. They sort of find themselves in that whirlwind and that vortex. Stepping into the State of Origin Arena, was that the case? Did it, even though you got those great players around, but is it becomes a, you're really reliant on that centre that you spoke of before, because it becomes a blur?
Yeah, I think so. One thing that I always did as part of my game day preparation is the way I believe I had a career was I wasn't the most talented player. And I looked around the room, and it was funny, Shane Richardson, that's actually the CEO at the Tigers at the moment, he was our CEO back when I was a kid, and he's got a bit of front about him, and he's a bit intimidating, that sort of stuff. And I remember I was 15 years old, just signed a contract at Penrith, and Penrith are known to have the best juniors throughout the game year end overseas. He came into the room and said, there's a room full of 30 young kids that all have the same dream and that sort of stuff, and he said two of you out of this whole room are going to make it. So I quickly scanned the room, and there was guys in there that were, when you're young, they've got a bit of a tag and that on them, on how good they are and that sort of stuff. So I automatically thought, what can I do that, one, they're not willing to do, or they're not tough enough to do? And for me, it wasn't skill, because if anyone remembers me playing, I was pretty straight up and down. But I thought, I'll complete everything. Doesn't mean I have to win all the fitness drills and that, but I'll complete everything. I'll be first to training. I'll just be a team first player. But
say that again. I like that. Tim, I like that piece. A team first player. I've never heard that before. I really like that. I think that's a pretty cool piece.
It's just a matter of how you hold yourself. You know, if there's a job to be done, it doesn't matter if it's carrying the ball into off the kickoff or filling the water bottles or cleaning up the strap and tape after the game. That's what I'm willing to do because I'm grateful for my opportunity to be here. I probably can't deliver what the superstars and that could, but there's a place for me in this team and I do have value. And my value was I was just going to work harder than anyone. I just wouldn't let anyone beat me. They can beat me with footwork, they can beat me with physicality, skill and that, but you'll have to do it over and over and over.
Once
you get sick of it, you're happy to do it, you know. So, and being honest, I could sit here and tell you that it's better than people and better skill and that sort of stuff, but that's all I had in the back of my head. And it's one thing, didn't really do too much work in the mental space, but I remember in warm-up and that, I went come up against front rowers that had a better career than me, or I'd played them, or, you know, they're highly ranked and they're big and strong and all that sort of stuff. But in my mind, I just go through what I'd done through the week. I used to do extras on my days off. I used to swim 2Ks every week. I used to eat the right things and got right into the sleep hygiene and that sort of stuff. And it just gave me the arrogance within my own head to go, they haven't done that. So I used to pray for it to be hot, like 40 plus degrees, because I knew that I can train in that. I know I can play in that, but they want to question themselves. You know, I'd love it. Get down in, I'd rather fight you in the gutter than in a boxing ring because that's my environment.
That's because you're from Penrith, right? So, I mean, that's a fair call. It's a good piece. Yeah. I mean, my lad and I, when he was very young, penned a quote, being the athlete as well, was, you know, it's the unseen that creates the machine. And I think that's a great quotation because it is. It's that doing what others aren't doing because plenty of people want to stand in front.
It's easy for me to go, you know what, they haven't done that. I'm not stupid to think it's elite sport. They've probably done that as well, but that didn't matter to me. That's what gave me my confidence, gave me my edge. Yeah. So it's all that mattered. You know? Like, I'm not suggesting I was the hardest worker in the NRL because there's guys that have probably done just as much or more than me at training and that sort of stuff. But that's what fed me to not have imposter syndrome and be on that stage.
Let's talk about that a bit more in a minute, but I can't neglect the opportunity I've got in front of me, Tim, with you. And one of the faults with the West Australian mining industry is the fencing that we have, the gates that we have. They get in. They're called Queenslanders, right? They sneak in. They get in, and we accommodate them. I mean, someone's got to dig a hole, right? It's mining. Someone's got to dig a hole, and, you know, we need them. So the thing about Queensland is everyone portrays them as being these incredible athletes, these staunch creatures when it comes to state of origin time. But let's be frank, just between you and me, the other, you know, 60-odd people that are listening this morning, they're not listening to this, but they're not near as hard as they look on TV, are they? The Queenslanders, especially the ones from North Queensland.
Yeah, mate, they got short memories. but they turn around and say it means more to them. And you know, they need to go over the archives and see actually, you know, who taught them how to play Origin, I think.
But, shit. Mate,
But
please go on.
All seriousness, and it's something that, you know, I bleed blue, and it doesn't matter who wins the Origin game or not, but to be fair, Queensland are actually passionate about it. And New South Wales, and I'm not talking about the team or the players, I'm talking about us as a community. Does it mean as much to us as a community as Queensland? As soon as we lose a game, the society are calling for changes and people to be sacked and all this sort of stuff. You don't get that out of Queensland. And I think to move in the right direction for New South Wales to be equivalent to Queensland, as in what it means, instead of going them or they, we start using us, because it is a state thing.
Yeah.
And it's something I'm passionate about. They do it better, and that's being honest. It's because in New South Wales, leading up to Origin, everyone's, I can't wait, we're the Blues, we're this and that. And then if you drop the first game or something, they're calling for, you know, coaches to be sad.
Yeah, something's amiss. I mean, I remember, you know, just to digress a little bit, but obviously my dad, who played 100 games for Penrith, he had a barber shop in High Street, Penrith, back in the day when Penrith wasn't the mini city that it is today. And he said the hardest thing about being a player for Penrith was that come Monday morning, you had to front the public. And so you had to obviously go back down and you have to walk past the paper shop and the chemist and the butcher and everything else, and you'd have to own it. Whereas he said the biggest change that he saw was when they started bringing in imports from the eastern suburbs or something like that. Well, that was fine. They could play a terrible game on the Sunday and then they'd wake up on the Monday morning and they'd go down the beach of Bondi or whatever it be, and they didn't have to face the public. So I think one of the challenges, and I think Queensland, that's probably an example of what they do really well, is the fact that they've got to face the public, right? And it's a community thing. It means something deep. Mate, talk to me, Tim, tell me about one of the toughest times that you've been through in your rugby league career, whether it be sustaining an injury that put you out when you were playing well or something like that, and where you went to in your head and how you sort of brought yourself back to centre, let's call it.
Yeah, I think one of the hardest things for me was I made my debut in 2007, played 12 games or something like that, 18, 19-year-old. And then going into the next season, we were lucky enough, the club bought Petro Sivanisiva. To me, as a young prop, to me, he was the best. And they brought him down from Brisbane to play at Penrith. And I had a really good pre-season. I was probably the fittest I'd ever been, strongest I'd ever been, and I just turned 19 or 20 or something like that. And Matty Elliott showed enough faith in me, and I was going to start the season as Petro's front row partner, which to me, that was like unbelievable. And we were going for a training run just before our first trial, and just normal every day, took a hit up, got twisted in a tackle, and ruptured my syndesmosis in my ankle. So I went and had ankle surgery, and that took me, you know, 4 months to come back from. And as a young guy, you're just trying to make it. And then you think, you know what, I've got this opportunity ahead of me. And then just a stupid, slight little tackle like that changed that season for me. But in saying that, like when I look back, I like to look at everything with a silver lining. I did get that dose of, I had to learn resilience pretty quick, because so many things go through your head, like, oh, that's probably my career gone. That was my opportunity. That was my win gone now. You know, I was rated as a young guy coming through, and, you know, Penrith invested in me to be there long term. But I didn't see that picture. I just seen I wanted everything now. You know, so it's just something that Gen Z or the guys that come through now get labelled with. They just want everything now. Well, nothing really changed. I wanted to be a regular first grader there and then, and no better person to learn off than Petro, and I thought my opportunity had gone just there and then. And throughout my career, I had different situations where that had been tested again, but I had a fair foundation from that. Like, to people, they're like, oh, mate, what are you doing when you're 20 years old? I'm not blasé, and I've spent some time in the mining industry for the last 4 years. Like, there's real world problems and there's professional athlete problems, and they're totally different things. I get that. You know, I wasn't struggling to put food on the table for kids, and I wasn't flying in, flying out away from my family and that sort of stuff. But right there and then, that's what my adversity was. That pulled my world to a halt.
But it was your world, right? Yeah. That's the key. That's the key with this resilience thing, is that, you know, I appreciate the respect shown and everything you've just said. And that's what I always say to people when we talk resilience. It's your journey. And that's that whole thing. And you know, whether you're a professional athlete, whether you work in a corporate environment, whether you're working in fly-in, fly-out, whatever it may well be, it's crucially important to you, or it's a moment in your life, but it is your journey, as opposed to doing some sort of comparison.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, thinking back of that, that was my problem then. And then later on in my career, I sort of moved on from the Panthers, which honestly broke my heart to leave my childhood club that I really cared about. And one of the reasons I left is because they identified five guys that they wanted to build a club around, and they probably spent too much mismanagement of the salary cap and that sort of stuff. So we had to move some players on. So in the back of my mind, I've got to leave a club that I really care and love. I love the community. Mm-hmm. I moved back out there. I love it that much. I moved from the eastern suburbs back out there, which some people think I'm crazy, but that's my community. But, you know, if you look at it on paper, I was guaranteed the money that I'd signed for. It was more than I was worth at the time, and I was, you know. But what I had in the back of my mind is, I've got to leave a club that I care about, and that become my problems, you know. And then I've got to try and get a new contract to pay for the investment properties and all that sort of stuff that I had going on at the time. So if I look back now, I was like, some people are doing their best to buy one property. I've got four or five, and I'm complaining. Like,
yeah,
but that was my reality. At the time, that was my reality.
Yeah. Tim, I want to say to you, I mean, you said just before, and I'll pick up on a couple of key things that when I talk resilience over here and everything else, you know, perspective's a big thing, right? You know, to be able to continually put things back into perspective, because we do have that threat response, and when that thing kicks in, we tend to globalise, you know, little things at times. And when I say little things, they're not necessarily little things in the moment, but they become, they're overall in the whole scheme of life or our journey of life, they become little things. But in the moment, we think they're front page news. We think we're never going to get through this. We're never going to get over it. You know, someone makes a mistake here on the work front or whatever it be, and, you know, they think that everyone's going to be talking about it forever and a day. You know, how do you maintain perspective? What is one way that you maintain perspective for yourself?
Well, I think, and one of the reasons why I went into the mining industry after playing footy is because I did need a dose of perspective.
Gotcha.
I look back, and it's something that I speak to the players now in my role now with the Tigers and with the NRL is, it's a bit embarrassing, but I went 14 years without reading, writing, or using a computer other than, you know, the analytics around my game and my performance and signing a jersey or signing a contract. And even down to, you know, I didn't look at my bank account for 10 years. That was looked after. So for me to get perspective, I wanted to go and live in the real world, so to speak, for a few years, and also detach from the game as well, because I think what players go through is an identity problem of they're just the footy player, and that's all mm-hmm. they can be. Mm-hmm. That's what I needed. I strongly believe that's what I needed to get a grip of reality and a perspective. But one thing I like doing with our guys here is perspective in their world is send them out and go see the 15, the 16-year-old kid that is dreaming of making it. You know, they've made it now. They're here. And it does become a job. But you go from this is what you want to do as a kid and you're just playing for your mates and that, and then all the pressures come and you sign a contract and all that sort of stuff. And sometimes you're like, oh, we've got training. Oh, Spume, we've got to travel to Townsville this week. Well, get a bit of perspective. That kid, he's doing everything he can to make it, to have your problems. You know what I mean?
Correct.
And then it can go even deeper. What your problem could be here at an $80 million centre of excellence, there's someone down the road and you know, $800 million hospital trying to keep their kids alive. Like, that's perspective as well, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
100%. 100%. I mean, that's probably one of the disappointing things. Sorry, Tim, I was going to say, that's one of the disappointing things. I remember, I think it was Mark Geyer actually once, and if it wasn't Mark Geyer, it was, you know, someone of a similar era, you know, said that, you know, we're killing the game, or we're killing things, because we've got these players, these young players now on hundreds of thousands of dollars, and, you know, they're out there whinging about the smallest of things and saying they're going to quit the game and throw it away and everything else. He said, mate, we've got the people that follow the game out the West, as an example. We've got bricklayers that are working 6-7 days a week laying bricks. They've got 6 kids at home to feed. They're struggling to make ends meet. They're renting a very tough environment and area and everything else. And they get this one opportunity on a Friday night to maybe go and, you know, take a little bit of that money they've got and have a couple of beers and watch a game that they love, only to watch these individuals that are running around complaining that, you know, they're doing a tough one, $500,000 or whatever it be at 21 years of age. So I always remember that piece. It always sort of sat with. So I think that's an important piece. Let's talk a little bit more then, Tim, while I've got you, is a couple of things. Perception's a big thing, right? Because we said about put things into perspective, but then we talk about perception, how we view things and how we see things. And I'm going to use this as an opportunity also to share with everyone how you and I met. And I know that he'd be very, very comfortable with me having this conversation. So Coxie's a bloke that I grew up with. And Coxie's, what do you say, Tim? He's a unique individual, right? And Coxie grew up as poor as they come, and with a single mother and his sister, and I grew up with him, and ultimately we were fortunate. We lived modestly and well, and Coxie was the one that lived in, you know, the poorest of housing commission and was struggling to eat. He literally was knocking on the back door of another kid's dad's pizza shop that I grew up with, and asking on behalf of the family if he could have some leftover pizza to feed his family. You know, incredible. And Coxie's gone on to achieve all sorts of great things, from working with Jerry Harvey at Harvey Norman, being employed directly by Phil Gould at the Penrith, and that's where I think maybe you guys met. Then he was with Canterbury, and now he's with St George, from all accounts. And I met Tim through Coxie. But I'll tell you a fun story about perception and how we create these monsters for ourselves. You know, Coxie's built like a racing ferret. But back in the day, Coxie was about 60 kilos, ring and wet. He was a bag of bones, and he was this little halfback. And he was a cheeky little halfback, and much in the mould of like a Gary Freeman or something like that. And he had some skills. But Coxie was blind as a bat. And anyway, Coxie used to wear glasses, and occasionally, Coxie being Coxie, he'd drop his glasses, he'd step on his glasses or whatever else, and 9 times out of 10, they were with sticky tape taped together. So, you know, they were joined at the middle with sticky tape. And anyway, he'd go out there, and he's quite the footballer. He's not a bad halfback at all. Had a good little kicking game, short kicking game, and had some skills. And he was also tough. He'd take on anything and everyone. And I'll pause it at that point. But I talk to people all the time about we have these perceptions of things. We manifest through the sleep of reason these monsters in our head that don't necessarily exist. And they cause us all sort of restrictions and everything else in our lives. So back to Coxie at that point. One of the club board members or whatever it was one day felt sorry for Coxie and grabbed him under his wing and took him and got him all sort of prescriptioned up and got him for the first time contact lenses, which Coxie had never owned. And so Coxie got these contact lenses and we went out to play this really important game. And Coxie went out in the field and he had the worst game I've ever seen him play. It was just not him. And anyway, he walks off the field. We said, "What the hell happened to you today?" And he goes, "For the first time in my life," he said, "I could see as clear as day." He said it was like high def. Not that we had high def back then, but he said, "I could see as clear as day." He said, "I had no fucking idea how big they were." So he threw the contact lenses away and he went back to playing blind. And the following week, with no eyesight whatsoever, he was back to being a great player. So that's my little fun story about how you and I met through Coxie, but how we perceive things. So up until the point that he could actually see them, he'd bluffed himself. You know what I mean? Like, it was quite a remarkable story.
And he's still as brave.
Yeah, yeah. That's great, isn't it? And that's another point. We surround ourselves with good people, right? I mean, Coxie gave me perspective. He gave me gratitude. But even today, he gives me energy. You know, like, he's inspirational. He's a role model. And that's something I'll take advantage of now, Tim, because I often talk to people about the need for role models, because when we're doing it tough, it's good to sort of look to someone that has been through something similar, if not the same, but they've come out the other side and they're marching forward, and we can follow their path, if you like. So for you, mate, is role modeling something that's played a big role in your journey?
Yeah, I think so. The biggest role models that I've had, they wouldn't even know that. Some of the biggest lessons I've learned is from them. I don't like to talk too much about how someone can help you. I just like to observe, and I learn from action. You know, some of the biggest lessons, like in my footy career, I learned was from Petro. I don't think I've ever sat down with him and spoke about, footy or even the way he held himself as a man, his kids and his wife and that sort of stuff, how he treated sponsors and fans and that sort of stuff. But he was a role model to me just from observing what he'd do and how he'd hold himself. And I'd done hours and hours of video on how he'd run the ball and how he'd use his body to, you know, bash people up and how he just done things. And he never pulled me aside and give me a lesson on that. But the way he did things, you know, I just soaked it all up. And I still sort of work like that today. One person I really, really admire and the way he goes about business is Shane Richardson here at the West Tigers. And
interesting, yeah.
I don't go in. I don't go into his office and say, hey, Richard, teach me how to salary cap or how do you sign players, and then I just observe how he does it and sort of ask questions here and there. Like he probably doesn't even know that I'm taking notes, you know what I mean? So, what I think with this sort of stuff as well is, especially in an industry like mining or something like that, it doesn't matter where you sit. You might be a labourer, you might be deputy, you might be whatever. You don't know who is actually watching you.
Yeah, love it.
I think it's like parents as well. Like you don't know that how much your kids actually take in. So I don't think you should put yourself out there to mentor or be a role model for anyone. Just be the best person you can be, and you can have influence that way. Most of the lessons to learn from action. I say to the boys here, we have meetings around culture and that, and I'll be like, there's a dictionary there full of words. I said, I can pick out as many as you want. We'll put them around, put them on all the walls and make it all fancy. I said, oh, we just brush all that and we just act in a certain way. I think that's more powerful.
Love that, mate. I really do. That's incredible. And Tim, it's Friday morning. You've rolled into the car park there in your Maserati or your Bentley or whatever you drive these days, being a star athlete. You know, the rest of us, we rode our push bikes to work today, but we'll do what we can. But, mate, you turn up today at the Panthers, Tigers HQ, so it's on my mind. You turn up at the Tigers HQ, and one of the players, one of your players, let's say first grade player for what it's worth, comes up and says, Tim, I need to talk. And you go, yeah, no dramas, let's talk. And he says, mate, I'm throwing it in, I'm over it. This week's been shit, it's been tough. I've thought about it, I've reflected, I'm over it, I'm out. What does Tim do? How do you deal with those situations?
Yeah, mate. So it comes off the back of rapport for the play to actually come up. It's very rarely that it would happen like that, because usually I just pick up on their body language, their energy. You know, some guys come in here dragging a chain every day, but that's normal. That's what they do every day. So that's fine. Whereas if they come in flying and you know, high-fiving and that, to me, that's an indicator that, one, they might be gambling or there's something happening in their life that they're not in center, you know what I mean? Like, their center is they come in every day dragging their feet. Some guys come in here flying every day. And the opposite, if they come in here a bit upset and that's my trigger to find out what's going on. But if a guy come up to me and said that, I wouldn't dismiss it at all. There's been times throughout my career and also and when I was going underground to cut coal where I wanted to throw it in. So I don't think you could just dismiss it and go, mate, what are you talking about? Do you know the opportunity you've got and that? Because you don't want to hear that. Let's sit down. Let's go through what you're thinking. And you know what? If that's an actual option where the love's not there anymore, okay, what's the next plan? So it might be a week. It might be a month. Might be 2 years. Might be 10 years. Where are you going to be when you actually do pull the pin career-wise? Because there is a reality of you might be copping your 500, a million, whatever it is now per season.
Mm-hmm.
To go out into the real world, lack of better words, to get 100 grand a year, you want to be educated, you want to be doing a fair job. Like you don't start on 100. And for some of these boys, they get 100 grand just to wear a pair of boots.
Going
through reality.
From when you first started the game to today, how much has it shifted to placing a focus on mental skills? Because, you know, if I go back and picture, you know, rugby league back when you probably first broke into grade, it was probably the old school sort of approach to most things, a tough love sort of approach to things. Maybe there's a little bit of focus around your mindset, but not a great deal. It was more about the physicality and get on with it and so on and so forth. And fast forward to modern day, it's such a factor, including, like I said, reading the other day in the paper that, you know, Matty Elligott's grabbed, Gilbert and Oka to help with the New South Wales preparation, even though he's a rugby union guy. What's the shift been for you? How much have you seen that? And the reason I say that is because I work in an industry where it has got a culture as such where, yep, there's a lot of focus in the modern day. There's a lot of people doing leadership program and coaching and all sorts of things. But it's not that far ago where if you suggested any of these things, they were like, mate, I know my job. Don't I don't need that stuff, right? So how much has it shifted in the modern day that there's a focus placed on that?
Yeah, I think it's a there's many factors in it. I think becoming professional was a massive one for the NRL. I look at our guys and girls for that matter. We're not athletes. Like, I honestly feel like we're different. You know, if it was hundreds of years ago, they'd have a sword and a tiger and they'd be fighting in a Coliseum. Like, it's different to a track and field athlete. It's different to a rugby union player, because they usually come from a private school background and that sort of stuff. Like, our guys, the socioeconomics of our guys are like, these are guys that come from rough areas and everyone, but like, it's a blue collar game, rugby league, and that's what makes it so great. We've had so many scandals in our game, but the game's always bigger than the scandal. It always comes back, you know, and I think for the first time in a long time, we're actually number one sport in Australia, and that's fact. It's not just us making it up, but we are still from the grassroots of selling raffle tickets and that sort of stuff. Yeah. So we are slow to the party, but I think to answer the question is, everyone's looking for that much edge where we push the players with all the right gym equipment, all the right sports science and that sort of stuff. What's next? And it's gone to that mental space. And unfortunately, we've had guys take their lives through pressure and that of rugby league. And we all play rugby league because we love it. And it usually your family loves it, and it's a positive thing. And then we've got guys that have taken their lives. It's something that the NRL heavily invest in. And I actually got the opportunity to go to New York mid last year, and I was sat at the boardroom of the NFL and the Major League Baseball and the NBA and that sort of stuff. And I thought we'd go there and they'd start picking our brains, but we'd pick their brains. But it turned to us. We are, and I'm not ashamed to say it, and this is genuine. We're the leaders in world sport, in the wellbeing space. And if you look at how much money, NRL turnover per year, how much they're actually spending in this space, we spend the most on, like, as a percentage of revenue within Australian sport, not just Australian sport, but international. We spend more than the NFL in this space than they would, not on a dollar figure, but on a percentage of how much their game's worth, how much is ours worth. And I think because we're Aussies, we like helping each other. And because we've got a small population and we only really play footy on one side of the country, we can't just spit out a player because he's from bad mental health or he's got drug charges or, you know, there's a lot of Latin Americans that play in the baseball league and they're affiliated with gangs and that sort of stuff. Over there, they'll just get rid of them because there's an ex-client knocking on the door. We've got to be more personable.
Well, it's a bit of a cultural thing there as well, isn't it? It's sort of a winning culture as such, that you're either winning or you're losing, whereas we're more forgiving, I guess. There's a winning and losing component, I get that, but in the US, my understanding is exactly that. You're either a winner on the gold medal with the podium or get out, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah, so I think our game's pushed a lot towards, one, we've identified that there is pressures and stress, and we've created that by giving young kids big contracts. There's media pressure and all that sort of stuff, and we're addressing it because we've got actual duty of care to do that, and it's working. And you know what? There's still huge ground to cover. We've just started to go into players transitioning. There's a lot of guys that you get left with your problems as soon as you're out of the game, and you know, I felt it as well. I was getting injected and taking tramadols, which tramadols, like most people have after surgery, like oxys and that sort of stuff. I was taking them to play a game of sport, you know, and all of a sudden you're out of the game and that's just cut off. I was fortunate enough to have some supports around me through family and mates, and also I didn't take any time off. I went straight into the mining industry, and for me it was probably the best thing I did, because I was still in that team environment. As weird as it sounds, you're still showering with the boys after, you high five, and they go, you got a common goal. You can complain with each other how shit the job is and have a win together. Like, for me, I found my feet, but a lot of guys, like, it was a soft landing for me. A lot of guys just get cut off, and then, you know what, their addiction to opioids and that sort of stuff goes with them. They're still gambling, like, like they're making, you know,
$500,000
a year and that sort. But the games, that's the next angle. Like the RLPA have actually taken over Transition, which is our players' union, and they've surrounded that with a lot of ex-players that can actually tell genuine stories. Instead of you going to see someone from Gamblers Anonymous that's never punted, these guys have, you know, have given their time up and also work for the PA now, where they can go to a young guy and get him and say, look, I've spent, you know, I had a $10 million career and now, you know, I'm making $1,200 a week and I've got no house, no family, no nothing. Like, the game is really starting to get on board with what's needed, which is great.
Tim, we've got a couple of minutes. We've got five left, right? But I want to give a couple of minutes at the end because I know there'll be a few questions for you. I mean, sometimes, Tim, everyone goes quiet at the end and you'll take it personally and you'll think, geez, must have bored the death people to death. But it's actually not the case. People here are processing things, thinking about things, and also people are taking off because we run a tight clock here, if you like. Mate, but I want to ask you, so right now for Tim Grant, you're at a great facility, you're around sport, you're around all those things, everything we've spoke of. But for yourself, on a daily basis, what do you do to support your resilience, your mental strength? You're hitting the gym, you're eating. What are you doing? What's Tim's routine, if you like?
Mate, I spent my career, you know, trying to put weight on and get big and strong because that's what the game was when I was playing. So for me, it's actually staying mobile now. I was fortunate enough not to have too many injuries where, you know, I went 10 years without surgery on knees and that sort of stuff. So for me, the only wealth you've got is your health. So I like to train every day. I also like to just eat right because it just makes me feel good. But I've actually really gone deep into how much sleep I can get. And it's something I just needed to do because I was doing night shift when I was in the pit. So I've really gone hard on my sleep. And, mate, I get a bit weird. I get into the biohacking. So ice baths, saunas.
Awesome, yeah.
Breast work. And you know what? It's not for everyone. And I come from an environment where it was high performance. And I used to say to the boys at work, I'd be like, how's sleep? Oh, mate, I've got 4 hours sleep, but I'll be sweet because they're smacking the Red Bulls and that. I'll be like, on the way home, just little tips. Like, on the way home, don't have a coffee before you go to bed. This is sleep during the day. Put sunglasses on when you drive home. Don't listen to the radio because it's all stimulating. Stay off your phone. Just little things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
After a while, the boys were starting to get 5 hours sleep, 6 hours sleep, and then, you know, so you don't have to be a high-performing athlete or act like one. Just little trial and error. So, mate, I still try things. I've just started running, which I didn't think I'd ever do because I was probably always too heavy for my natural weight, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got to a weight where it's good for me to be able to move better and that. So I've just got into the running now, and it's just trial and error.
Love it, Tim.
I'm just trying to be the best version of myself, you know. It sounds wanky because everyone says that sort of stuff, but I'm just immersed myself in learning now because, if anything, I didn't learn a lot for the last 15 years being everything was done for me, and it's a bit embarrassing, but I'm trying to catch up now and just immerse myself around people that are smarter than me and also ask heaps of questions, and I love podcasts and that sort of stuff. So, I'm just trying to, find what I'm really going to be remembered for instead of just being a footy player.
Mate, I love it. You know, and everything you said resonates strongly. I love the fact that, you know, you're just trying to be the best version. I know you say that that's probably used with a level of cliche. Well, it probably is, but I actually still maintain it's a common language more people should use because it should be about just trying to be the best version of self. Also, summarising, you know, what you suggested, it's about the 1%, right? It's every day just playing with it a little bit, every day just trying to find an angle that works for you and supports you. But I guess, to quote Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor, it's about getting active in your own rescue as opposed to, you know, thinking someone's going to come and do it for you. So, mate, fantastic stuff. Look, what we're going to do, Tim, is I'm going to thank you, and you and I will speak again in the near future and we'll talk more about this. But I want to bring you back online because I'm hoping there's a few questions that could be posed to you and people could take advantage of the luxury that we've got this morning with you. Hopefully no Queenslander gets on there and starts all the Queenslander shit. Well, it's all right, we can edit stuff out. We edit it out. That's why I can get away with swearing, because I just blur it out. Right, so people come back online and someone...
I'm going to jump in first, Clay. Tim, thanks for your talk, mate. You speak really well for a front row, which is quite unusual.
You're not a spitter, are you, mate?
No, but I work with plenty of them, mate.
I'd be your worst nightmare. I used to break everything.
Look, just coincidentally, I'm a Canberra Raiders supporter, so enjoy your trip to Canberra tonight. You'll need a lot of luck. Ricky's got the boys firing. I was interested in your point, like Clay was, about this back to centre stuff and people breaking the line sort of thing and attack and doing their own thing. And I'm thinking that I'm relating that back to the workplace too, you know, and I suppose it's a fine line to draw. You're going to have superstars who break the line. Now, your coach, Benji Marshall, was renowned for that, breaking the line, sort of doing his own thing. There's another guy, I remember Carlos Spencer, he played for the Blues and the All Blacks, and first of all, guys outside of him used to hate playing with him sometimes because they never knew what he was going to do. And then, you know, it was really hard to bring him back to centre. But I guess, you know, you can't hold those guys back who are the stars either to break the line, so to speak. And you have that in the workplace as well. And how do you manage those guys who are superstars who want to break the line and probably are going to be hard to pull back to centre?
Yeah, I think in a footy term, it's... My job in the team wasn't to have that flair and play what's in front of you, but that was someone like Benji. That was a part of his centre, right? Like he was encouraged to play what's in front of him, but there's also the team centre of when it all goes to shit, we've got a guideline around us, we've got a framework that works for us, and that's what we do. And so, you know, everyone, you watch Melbourne play, and it's changed a little bit now because they've got, you know, a bit of strike in that now. But back in the day, it was boring to watch Melbourne play, but they won games because they were so structured that, you know, it wouldn't have suited someone like Benji Marshall on that. But their framework was that at the West Tigers, they won, in the same era, the West Tigers won a comp from Benji in that playing flair, but they also had a game plan of when it all goes to shit. And I think... One thing that comes to mind in the workplace and in mining especially is you got KPIs and that are great, that keeps everyone accountable, but if something happens, you've got to break down or something during the night, during your shift, then how are we going to get to our KPI? Well, instead of reverting back to the framework and on your report you write about delays and that sort of stuff, you want to start cutting corners, and that's when bikes get hurt and that sort of stuff. So there is a framework there to support what you're doing that we go back to. But you know what? If you can cut a couple of extra meters and get back on target from pure skill, there's someone that can do that. Give him the remote. So everyone knows their role within the team. And it's a long-winded answer, but I just think knowing where your center is, for Benji Marshall, his center was flair, and that for me it wasn't. And there was a framework around what we did, and he fit into that framework with his flair and that sort of stuff. Everyone knowing their role. And I think that's the hardest part. I'm learning the management side of things now. The hardest part of the managing is getting everyone to know their role without putting them in a cage of not being able to express themselves and show their skill that we don't know about. So it's a fine line.
Have we got anyone else? We've got a couple of minutes. I'm mindful of everyone's time on a Friday and everything else, but is there someone else who'd like to ask a question of Tim before we start to wrap it right up? Sanjay, you're a Kiwi and a Union supporter, mate, but give it a crack.
Hey Tim, how you going?
Good, thanks.
That's good. So with leaders implementing our crews to get to a common goal, right? So how important is your life, career and experiences, like you've moved clubs, you've come back to the Panthers, you got that injury, and dealing with all those and having that resilience, how important is that to your current role to influence those guys and your players?
Yeah, so in my current role now, I'm relatable. That's the biggest thing, but you can't be relatable if I've got all the answers from. So I can't say, oh, well, back in my day, what you think your problem's hard. Well, when I was your age, I had this or that. So, like, it's just a listening, you know, and knowing when to be able to have that relatable chat of, you know what, this is what I did. It mightn't work for you, but this is what I did when I was going through adversity or whatever. But I think this is coming from sitting down with all of Sykes, because I'm still learning how to talk to people, to be honest. And for me, it's acknowledge that you've understood it, so that there's two things. You can listen to comprehend, or you can listen to reply, you know what I mean? So if someone's got an issue, and that is definitely take it on board, and even using words like, it sounds like to me that you're, and then you give back what they've said to you. So then it's like, you know what, this guy's he actually cares. Instead of going, oh, mate, I know you've had a shit day at work. I had 7 shit days at work. Like, no one wants to hear that. They just want to be gullible. They also want to know that you actually care, genuinely care. And how do we do that? You know, if I say to you, are you listening? You go, yeah, I'm listening. Or if you repeat it to me and say, oh, Tim, it sounds like this is what you mean. And then just leave it open for them to go, you know what, yeah, that's what it is. Or they might turn around and go, oh, no, not really. This is what I actually mean. Like, just being in the conversation and not trying to use yours. Like, it's a fine one, because part of my job is, and why ex-players in this role are important, because we can relate. And I say to the boys, I'll be like, don't be embarrassed to tell me, because if I haven't gone through it, I would have seen it before. And that's genuine. But I'm not saying I'm not going to learn something new either, because there's this whole new world of social media and all that sort of stuff that wasn't really in my time. But being able to be relatable, have rapport, and also genuinely listen, because no one cares what you know until they know you care. That's across the board. You know, we get people coming here with PhDs and all this sort of stuff, and the world's best psychs and that, and the boys won't speak to them because, one, they talk down to them, or two, they don't understand what they're saying.
Yeah, and that's what we find as coaches within this team, is we challenge that thinking, right, and get that buy-in, so that they're becoming as unbiased, and just work on that person themselves. So,
I think, well, as a coach, you don't have to know all the answers. Just because you've got the coach tag, you don't have to know. So delegation's one thing as well. Is like, you know what, mate, I don't understand where you're coming from. We haven't got someone that specializes in that, but you know what, I'm going to find the right person for you. I think that's powerful. And also being able to learn off the person that's telling you. Like, you know what, I'm yet to have kids and that, so some of our guys have problems around, you know, their kids and that sort of stuff. Mate, I can't give you real good advice, but I'm listening, and I'll find someone that can give you the advice and point you in the right direction.
Tim, mate, this is incredible. This is great. And I've just got it lining up on my chat thing over here, the amount of questions, and I'm going to have to call it, because Sanjay, mate, seriously, great question. I mucked around with you at the start, but mate, great question. And you know, beautifully answered by yourself as well, Tim. I mean, there's so many takeaways from this today, mate. We've had a bloody strong cohort this morning. The fact that it's 8 minutes past 8 on a Friday, and we've still got over 30 people still logged in listening, and I've still got my messages pinging with questions. I'm going to call it. So I have to call it. So I want to thank everyone for logging in this morning. I want to thank Tim Grant, and again, we're just privileged to be able to listen to someone with such an appreciation, understanding, and also so humble and authentic in how they deliver. So, mate, Tim, massive thank you to you and equally to the cohort. Thank you very much for everyone logging in this morning, and we'll see you next time.